economy is already carrying those costs, and they are being paid by, in the form of, you know, human health impacts, water issues, droughts, impacts on the agriculture sector, and so on. And, you know, that then requires our public monies to step in and assist. So it's about where in the economy one is asking that those costs be paid. And obviously, heavy emitting businesses, and I don't hold it against them that they want to defend their businesses, you know, don't want the cost to be carried by them, so they are resistant. But there are other businesses who see the right-hand side of that picture as quite an opportunity, and they would be voices that, as you were saying, Chairperson, you know, you might want to bring into the room. And I would encourage us to start thinking about the opportunity side of the low-carbon transition as well. For example, you know, the mining industry could be looking at what types of primary resources would be required in a low-carbon economy and how well-positioned is our resources to meet that. And just to underline that the transition has to be a just transition, and I think there are all kinds of resources out there. For example, the Economic Development Department has done a study on looking at job resilience plans in the sectors that might be quite impacted. So, you know, it's easy to say, tax us and jobs will be lost. Well, jobs must grow somewhere else, and there are ways of protecting the workers in the sunset industries. The other dimension, of course, Prometheum showed us this slide earlier, so it just illustrates that the rest of the world is orientating towards putting a price on carbon, and that exposes us to various kinds of trade impacts. And this is not theoretical anymore. The EU, and 17% of our exports go to European countries, the EU has declared that it will refuse to sign any more trade agreements with countries that are not ratifying the Paris Agreement and taking action to reduce their emissions. So it really is starting to be a factor of business, never mind international relations. California has instituted a border adjustment tax for construction materials, for example. So in a way, when we speak about trade exposure, the trade exposure is starting to be the other way around. That if you don't put some kind of carbon product price on South Africa's products and services, we will be at a disadvantage relative to other countries' products. And I can go into that more, but you know, the EU is a very good example of how that might come into play. Then we are saying, and we've used these, and I saw that a lot of the other presentations had also drawn on them, so we've looked at current literature. Basically, our one argument is that the price, the carbon price, is too low. And there was a question raised as to, well, what should it be then? So we have done these calculations, translating these things, which are variously expressed in dollars and euros and, you know, in 2008 rands and so on, into 2018 rands. And those are some of the recommended prices to be effective. The first number in the yellow block is the carbon price that is already in place across all of those countries, or in the OECD study, they studied 41 OECD and G20 countries, and it's the average across those that they study. But, you know, an effective carbon price is, as you can see, a lot higher than what we're looking at. And if we say, you know, in an international context, we are still a developing country, so we need not necessarily impose the highest carbon price on ourselves. But just even taking the long-term mitigation scenarios, a study that was done by ERC of UCT who presented earlier, you know, they didn't even start modeling at a price below 182 rand per ton. That isn't even the price they recommended, it's just that it was pointless to model anything lower. And Treasury's own paper in 2005 prices, which I've translated to 2018, you know, gave somewhere between 162 and 433. So I think we can see that 120 rand a ton is completely inadequate in relation to those. And then we are giving all these tax-free allowances, which really bring the tax down to between 48 rand and 6 rand a ton. I don't even think I have to say why that's a problem. So these... And then the increases allowed in the proposed bill, you know, one could say, let's get the tax in place now, and slowly over time we'll ratchet it up, which will smooth the transition for some companies and get us to an effective carbon price later. But the way the increases are proposed, we're never going to get there. Firstly, it's only in the first period to 2022 that you do any increase above inflationary. And after that, you effectively fix the price, because all you do is increase it by the rate of inflation. And if one compares in the bottom table, the pink and the blue and the pink, to what the long-term mitigation scenarios were saying was the optimal path, the carbon tax price in the optimal path. You know, by 2020 they were talking about it should be over 542 rand, and in 2035 over 1,000 rand. So we really believe the levels and the increases in the proposed bill are far too low. And then we have all these allowances which effectively reduce this to a token. It's not going to drive a relative reorientation of the economy. And I will just point to some of the allowances that we really think could be done away with. The carbon budget allowance. If we've got a carbon budget system that is compulsory, why do companies...
Sorry, you're at 9 minutes, but you'll give you some...
Thank you. Why do companies get a reward for conforming to the law? We also, the trade exposure allowance, I think I've explained that it's almost starting to be the other way around now, that you need lower carbon in order to be competitive. The performance allowance, the intention of the tax is to drive lower carbon choices. So in that sense, you need not really be rewarded for doing better than the benchmarks, because you are rewarded by having a lower tax liability. Obviously, if one removes some of these allowances, the maximum must also drop. There is one thing, the process emissions allowance. We do support that where a product or a company is something that we need in the aims of development in the country, like cement, like steel, that one does have to look at special measures there. And, you know, you can't make cement without these emissions, so maybe the strategy there is the alternatives to cement, and WWF is doing some work on that. And we are really sort of worried that the whole structure in the bill will lead to the worst case scenario, which is that companies will be able to just pay the tax because it's not that impactful on them, pass through that cost and not do anything about the emissions, because it's more expensive to do something about the emissions than just pay the tax. This is where we did some manual sort of back of envelope calculations of the top 10 emitting companies of CDP, the carbon disclosure platform, of what their revenue is from their annual reports, what their emissions are, and what the tax at 120 rand a ton with a 95% allowance, what percentage is the tax liability of their revenue? And it's not for me to answer this question for businesses, but I would query that if your tax liability is 0.1% of your revenue, whether that's even going to drive any behavior. And we've done this for the top 20 emitters. second last point is on the urgency of this. So I very much appreciate that, you know, the duty of Parliament to not pass something that you don't understand is protects us as the people. But please, can we do this as rapidly as possible? Because part of the strategy since the 2010 discussion paper is for high emitters to just delay the process. So, you know, there's always a welcoming of a slower process, more discussion, and of issues of alignment and so on. So if I come to, and this is my last slide, if I come to this issue of alignment, we would argue that these are two separate kinds of instruments. The one is an economy-wide tax to reorientate the economy, and the other one, the carbon budgets from the Department of Environmental Affairs, is a regulatory instrument to work down over time emissions from particular activities. And to create all sorts of complicated architectures that you will only be taxed if your emissions exceed your carbon budget is to misunderstand the purposes of these two instruments and is to give another basic tax-free allowance called the carbon budget to companies. The alignment should take the following form, the same reporting regulations which are there, the same offset system can be used in both, and the five-year periods need to be aligned. Yeah, and we would argue that, you know, carbon budgets shouldn't be a sort of another hidden form of a tax-free allowance. And we urge the honourable members to shift the burden of climate change and position our economy for competitiveness and development defend the interests of poor. Thank you.
Sorry to push you like that.
Thank you for your indulgence.
But remember, this is our initial foray. Over then to the next one, which is ESCOM.
Thank you. Thank you, Honourable Chair, and thank you to you and Honourable Mapulani for the opportunity to present. I just want to start off by saying that we've done some climate modelling with the CSIR that shows really scary pictures of what's going to happen in the country and in Southern Africa over the next 100 years. I'm very happy to sit down with Professor Lloyd and share that, because that picture scares me. So I think it should scare all of us. Having said that, I want to say that ESCOM is therefore extremely supportive of international and national processes to manage climate change. We also think carbon pricing is an extremely important instrument, but it's a suite of instruments that we need to look at that would be fit for purpose for South Africa. And for that reason, we're also part of the Carbon Pricing Leadership Coalition, which is a global coalition looking at how do you price effectively. So if we can go on to the slides, Chair, a lot of people have said some of the issues that we bring up here. We've also had positive engagements with National Treasury since 2010 and even before that. And a lot of our comments have been taken into account, and we thank the Treasury for that. And we've also had lots of positive engagements with Environmental Affairs. So there's two main issues that we want to raise, which other people have raised, but just to put a slightly different spin on it. One is the area of alignment with what is going on in terms of carbon regulation from the Department of Environmental Affairs. I think there are two particular areas of alignment that we're looking for. One is with the mandatory greenhouse gas reporting regulations that have been promulgated. Our first submission is due at the end of March, and the systems are not in place as yet, so it's just a concern over how all of these systems are going to be aligned. And then the second is the company-level carbon budgets, which a lot of people have spoken to. So with respect to the carbon budgets, in National Treasury's response earlier, they made reference to a World Bank-sponsored study. And we think there's a lot of good options that came out of the study. And one is the tax enforcers budget option, whereby entities pay a tax on those emissions in excess of their budget. So if you have a carbon budget as a company, which most of us in the room have, but if you exceed that budget, then you pay the tax on that exceedance. And looking at some of the best practice around the world, that is something that has been looked at. We're in an economy where emissions trading at the moment is not probably something that is useful, but having a cap and a penalty instrument might be something that we could look at. So I think a lot of people have spoken about the alignment of the timing, with the compulsory budget coming into place in 2021 and the tax being promulgated in 2019, and there's an issue around the systems that are in place, the company budgets being in place, and those things. So a lot of people have spoken about that. I won't reiterate that. Chair, I think the point that I want to emphasize on this slide is the electricity price impact. And also to talk about the internalization of the carbon price in the integrated resource plan. So the IRP, as you know, the one in 2010 and the one that is in draft now, already includes a greenhouse gas emissions cap for the electricity sector. So in other words, the modeling in the IRP in previous years has been based on least cost optimization. So the model looks at the demand for electricity and will build options based on least cost. But what happens in the IRP now is as soon as it hits that emissions cap, it starts to build technologies that will not produce carbon emissions, which is why in the 2010 IRP you see a lot of renewables and you also see the big 9.5 gigawatts of nuclear. So because the IRP includes these lower carbon options, which are at the moment more expensive than the coal option, the IRP itself is more expensive. The electricity price is more expensive, which is why we say it's internalized. The 2016 IRP draft also includes the peak, plateau, and decline scenarios that DR have put in place as well. So I think, you know, we've been talking about the impact on the price of electricity. National Treasury has been taken in our comments on that, and they have committed to minimizing that impact. So in the initial phase, we have revenue neutrality in that regard. In the new bill, though, the renewables rebate goes up to December 2022, whereas REIPP contracts we have signed goes up to 2038. So if we look at that difference, there will be an increase in the electricity tariff from 2023, and that we've modeled at around 13 billion rand per year. So, Chair, that is based on some calculations that we've done internally. We're still doing financial modeling to get better numbers for you. As you know, we released our results pretty late this year, so we still have those numbers that we're working on in terms of the modeling. But I think just to reiterate and just to summarize is that overall we support carbon pricing. We just think we need to look at what's fit for purpose. We really will encourage the committee to look at the alignment in terms of the task force's budget option that came out of the World Bank report. And also we to have some alignment between DOE, DEA, and National Treasury in terms of what the IRP is advocating. Thank you.
The use of time so prudently. Next is, it's legal resources, am I right? And then it's consulting. Thank you. Where's legal resources? Are they?
Hello.
Yeah. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Honourable Chairman and Members. Thank you for allowing the Legal Resources Centre an opportunity to give this presentation at Parliament. In terms of the National Climate Change Response White Paper, the main aim of the White Paper is to transform South Africa's economy into a low-carbon economy in order to avert any impacts climate change might have on South Africa. In order to undertake this change, the White Paper elicits a multi-pronged approach which nexus positive and negative strategies to change the behavior of South Africans. One such intervention or project is the implementation of this bill. In light of this, the presentation will focus on three key areas. One is the new area that was not detailed in the legal resources written submission, and the other two are expansions on the various topics detailed in the written submission. The first issue is cooperation and cooperative governance. In terms of the introductory, as stated in terms of in the introductory section above, it's clear that the bill will impact a plethora of government institutions and the country as a whole. The text of the bill, however, fails to give any detail on how cooperation between government institutions will operate. Failure to have various policies and agreements will cause tension among the various institutions. For example, NUMSA recently obtained an interdict to stall the IPP procurement plan from continuing. The IPP procurement plan is just like the bill in terms of reducing our carbon footprint. If government fails to give a detailed plan on how the various government departments and organizations can work together, there will be a huge resistance to the bill. In light of this, it is tentatively proffered that government must concentrate on the following cooperative plans before the bill is passed in order to promote the green economy and allow for a smoother transition. Plan to upskilling workers in the carbon sector, plan to create an intergovernmental task team to undertake compliance and enforcement, impact on the economy and monitoring reports on South Africa's emissions, and a plan on how to protect workers' rights and the environment. In terms of compliance and enforcement, there are two main departments that would deal with compliance and enforcement as outlined in the bill itself. Of course, that is the Department of Environmental Affairs and the Department of Finance. I'll deal with compliance as the first issue, and then I'll deal with enforcement afterwards. In terms of compliance, to become compliant from a carbon emitter, the carbon emitter first has to report the quantity of its greenhouse gas. This is in terms of current regulations are in place, is undertaken by the Department of Environmental Affairs in terms of Section 4.1 of the bill, read with the greenhouse gas emission reporting regulations and the declaration of greenhouse gases prior to air pollution. The second compliance obligation is for the carbon emitter to pay for the amount of greenhouse gas emitted after the deductions have been calculated. The first issue pertaining to compliance is as follows. It's not clear if the environmental regulations stated above are going to be used as a reporting methodology. The regulations mentioned earlier were promulgated in terms of the National Environmental Management Air Quality Act and have not been linked to the bill. The only section that is relevant which might potentially link to the bill is when the following was stated in those regulations, that the regulations are created inter alia to inform the formulation and implementation of legislation and policy. However, as stated previously, the bill is a financial bill that does not deal with environmental issues, but for the fact that the taxes are an environmental impact. There is a mention that also in the socio-economic impact assessment that the Department of Environmental Affairs, together with the Department of Energy, has to implement a monitoring system. No further detail was given. However, this is not clear, and it's therefore not clearly defined in the bill. We also have to look at the bill as what's written, and in terms of that, there's no mention of how the system would operate. In terms of the above clarification, is critical for the following. The competent authority in the regulations mentioned above is the Department of Environmental Affairs. However, if this is not the regulations that will be used, then the bill will have to refer to Section 4.2, wherein the competent authority will become the Commissioner of South African Revenue Services. This, is, of course, will create a problem as the Commissioner and the Commission Department will have to become an expert on carbon scientific reporting detailing the emissions, or at the very least will have to increase its compliance and monitoring offices. The second issue, assuming the above-mentioned regulations are the reporting methodology regulations for the purpose of the bill, the regulations allow for a 5-year reporting gap wherein companies only have to report in terms of a Tier 1 system as outlined in the IPCC guidelines for the National Greenhouse Gas Inventory. It's noted at the IPCC reporting system that the Tier 1 does not take into consideration national circumstances. This is problematic, as we will not get effective reporting systems that allow for proper taxing to occur. The third issue pertains to liability and government operations. Noting that the Commissioner will be relying on the report, if the Department of Environmental Affairs is the responsible authority, does that negate any liability on the Commission in terms of collecting tax? This is especially important if disputes start arising between the public and government. Lastly, if it was stated in terms of socio-economic impact assessment that National Treasury will have to ensure allocation of resources to minimize the impact on income for poor and working people, and also that they would have to budget allocation fiscal expenditure. It would appear that in terms of the budget fees, this was not taken into consideration. In terms of enforcement, currently the bill has no direct provision for any enforcement system. The only enforcement system that will be in place pertains to the Customs and Excises Act. At this juncture, it's important to note again that it is vital to find out whether the regulations detailed above are going to be the reporting methodology for calculating how much emissions have been emitted and who is the responsible authority. Depending on whether there's going to be a reporting system, the following is brought to the Standing Committee's attention. If the regulations are not the correct ones in terms of enforcement, then enforcement will be left to the Commissioner, as detailed earlier. In terms of this, the Commission is either not the competent authority, does not have the ability and therefore would need assistance, or the Commission will have to employ further experts to determine liability. If the regulations are going to be used as a reporting methodology and the Department of Environmental Affairs is the competent authority, how does the Department of Environmental Affairs intend to enforce administrative or criminal sanctions? To date, the Green Scorpions or Environmental Management Inspectors are heavily under-resourced and cannot complete their mandate. There is also a conflict regarding the Department of Mineral Resources and the Department of Environmental Affairs' ability to effect enforcement due to the one-all environmental system, which was, in terms of Section 50A 1 and 2 of the National Environmental Management Act, read with Section 38A of the Mineral Petroleum Resources Development Act, been implemented since 2014. In terms of carbon offsetting, there is no detail about who will monitor and check that such offset projects have indeed been implemented. Furthermore, there is no detail on how enforcement will be used when it comes to offsetting. The last section that I'd like to deal with is revenue recycling. The current edition of the bill does not include a guarantee of revenue recycling. The only mention of the issue of revenue recycling is in the explanatory memorandum marked Annex 1 and the socio-economic impact assessment. The biggest issue there is in terms of revenue neutrality through the revenue recycling by reducing electricity generation levy and renewable energy premium credit. However, there's no mention in the bill itself regarding a detailed linkage to revenue recycling. It must be noted that this aspect is critical. Without proper designation of revenue recycling, the poor are going to have to pay higher rates for electricity because there's no guarantee that the tax derived from the bill will be earmarked for reduction in electricity, especially when we know that Eskom is undertaking issues with its finances right currently. It's imperative, therefore, that a policy agreement is concluded with Eskom before the bill becomes legislation. Lastly, there's been no mention on the cost of food and other goods that are going to be impacted by this bill. Accordingly, the fuel levy is going to increase due to the bill, and this will of course naturally impact food prices. It is suggested that the fuel levy be re-looked at in terms of the potential revenue cycling to minimise increase of vital foods on communities, failure which could impact the right to food in terms of the constitution. In conclusion, the Legal Resources Centre is cautiously in accordance with the bill. However, there has to be a plethora of issues to be addressed before Parliament is ready to allow the bill to be enacted. Once again, on behalf of the LRC, I thank the honourable members and the chair and standing committee for their time.
Thank you very much. Over then to Kosatu.
Okay, thanks very much, Chairperson, and good afternoon to members and colleagues and comrades. Thanks for giving us space to raise our contributions on this issue. I think, Chair, look, basically Kosatu wants to make one simple point, is that we feel that saving the environment doesn't have to go at the cost of saving jobs. We think we can do both at the same time. If we're creative and if we work together as government, as industry, as labour, as communities, etc. Chair, look, I think for us to say we accept the realities of the impact of climate change. We don't want to join those environmental denialists who want to deny the obvious painful reality of the world. We agree that there's a need for urgent action to halt climate change, and really as a world we've delayed far too long. I think as Capetonians we don't need to go any further to see what's the danger. We accept the painful and obnoxious reality of tax as a tool of government to force industry, force society to change. But Chair, I think we're equally very frustrated with government, which doesn't have to date a significant comprehensive jobs plan. We don't have a transition plan to move us to a green economy and a green future. I think, Chair, I won't go into too much detail around the impact of climate change upon workers, but look, you just need to walk around Cape Town to see the water crisis. You need to look at pollution in our urban and industrial areas. We need to look at the thousands of jobs we're going to lose now in the Western Cape in agriculture. We need to look at the rising levels of skin cancer. And you know, Chair, I think about 60% of the world lives along coastal, along the sea. And with rising sea levels, we're all going to be in a real crisis down the road. And I think, Chair, just to sympathise with government, we also recognise the significant fiscal burden to the state of these changes. Chair, look, as COSATU, we get our mandate from our affiliate unions, and our energy union is the National Union of Mine Workers, which for many years has been at the forefront of saying, let's expand renewable energy. Let's invest there, let's create jobs, and so on. We felt that as COSATU and Avenue, we've had our fingers burnt, in fact, by the state. You remember last year that Eskom threatened to retrench 5,000 coal workers in Mpumalanga. The explanation given to them was contradictory and it didn't make sense. Something about surplus electricity or something doesn't make sense in a continent starving for electricity. But we met officials from Eskom confidentially. They told us no, that is to defend the Gupta's coal contracts with Eskom, to provoke NUM COSATU to attacking renewable energy and so on. And it puts us in a very difficult spot, Chair, because our members are looking to us to protect their jobs. Long-term issues come secondary, but the first thing is for them to have a salary to take home to their family at the end of the day. Chair, we're very worried that Eskom was already saying they wanted to reduce jobs by 10% next year, and the chairperson of Eskom saying he wants to reduce jobs by 50% at Eskom. We're talking about 47,000 workers at Eskom. Chair, we don't get hope that the new chair of Eskom led Telkom when they reduced workers from 50,000 to 94 to 5,000 today. And Chair, you know, there's no union which is worth its salt if it doesn't defend its members' jobs. Chair, look, in terms of the carbon tax, and I don't want to pretend to be an expert on how much cents or percentage you must charge for which gas and all of that. We'll leave that to much clever, more clever people. We do accept the principle that you must punish polluters. We appreciate that the initial levels of the tax are low, and there's exemptions for agriculture. Agriculture, Chair, being the highest employer of workers outside of the public sector. But also, Chair, we are very worried about the mining industry, which is extremely fragile. We've lost 70,000 jobs in the last 2 years. Though we do get hope from the new Minister of Mining, who is a colleague of yours, Chair, in the Politburo of the party. Chair, we are concerned that government doesn't seem to have any other interventions to deal with climate change. So it seems to be Treasury has its usual energy, let's tax. We don't hear from other departments. And let me say we don't hear in particular from departments of environmental affairs, water affairs, agriculture and forestry. We see very little much from them. Even when you look at the job targets for environmental affairs, it's very small, micro-level stuff. 900 jobs in recycling, for example. We are worried, Chair, that we are going to a state of overtaxation, and increasingly our taxes are aggressive, so they treat the poor and the rich equally. Be it VAT, the health promotion levy, the income tax bracket adjustments, the fuel hikes, etc., etc. And we appreciate government's energy to raise taxes, Chair, but we would really love to see that same energy for a jobs plan across all departments. Chair, in this year's budget, only 5 departments spoke about specific job targets. Others seemingly were not worried about it. So, Chair, our proposal is that we need to have a jobs plan, a transition plan, or just transition plan. It must lead up to the Presidential Jobs and Investment Summits. There need to be specific macro and sectoral targets, as the President called for in the SONA. And Chair, we want to be very blunt and to the point. If we're going to expand jobs in the renewable energy sector, let's target specifically those coal mine workers whose jobs may be under threat. We appreciate that we're creating jobs in the Northern Cape, which is fantastic, but it's difficult to sell that as a victory to 5,000 coal workers in Witbank, Ermelo, Middelburg and so on, who will be threatened to go home unemployed. And it takes about 2 years for a worker to find another job. So Chair, we're saying simply invest in renewable energy in Mpumalanga and those coal producing towns. Let's not create more ghost towns. Chair, we're also very confused about Eskom. So we are worried that renewable energy is becoming a privatization of electricity through the back door, but we don't understand why Eskom itself is not investing in renewable energy. It has the resources. Eskom is not married to one type of electricity, it's all types of electricity, but it can't decide for the life of us why it's running away from this opportunity. Chair, we have a huge market of Africa to export electricity to. You have the next wave of electric cars coming upon all of us. Chair, in China they're producing about 700,000 electric cars per annum. Norway, Sweden, a few other countries have already said they're going to phase out your fuel cars. So this is a chance for us to create jobs, Chair, to industrialise. Chair, I think there's many opportunities for us to look at creating jobs, industrialisation. There's a whole variety of growing renewable technology available, from roof tiles, road surfaces. You can require all buildings to have renewable energy. Chair, we've even seen articles that if you paint the roads white, it'll help to reduce climate change. Again, this is a chance to create jobs. Chair, I think we've only seen the city of Cape Town looking at having electric buses, for example. Sorry, Chair, and I think just to get to the conclusion, because I know you're under time pressure, we think we need to be a bit focused on government. There are certain sectors which really need assistance to transition to the green economy. Agriculture, aquaculture, fishing, forestry. The opportunities to grow industries like biofuel. There's opportunity to create jobs and address climate change through waste management, recycling. And of course, Chair, I think we should engage the PIC to invest in green industry and request their investments to be linked to that. I think, Chair, we'd also want to propose to Treasury, and we know Treasury hates ring fencing, so we don't have to call it ring fencing, Chair, but whatever revenue they collect through carbon tax, let that be invested in creating green jobs. It can't just be us giving money again and again to government, and then government spends it in weird and unusual ways. I think, Chair, Eskom is committed to coming to the party. In fact, let's not talk about Eskom. Government must instruct Eskom to stop having tariff hikes above inflation levels. The same government is hitting us for demanding inflation plus wage increases. Let's see government also apply that very convincing argument to Eskom. I think, Chair, we want to see government come with a mitigation plan for the poor, such as VAT exemption and so on. And I think lastly, Chair, we really want to see any new tax linked to a serious jobs plan, an investment plan, or a genuine engagement between government, industry, labour, civil society, both here at Parliament and at NEDLAC. And lastly, Chair, we think this should be ready in time for the presidential jobs and investment summits. Thanks very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Questions, comments, please?
Because we don't have time, it's just going to be one issue and it's going to relate to
Eskom.
Because we rush into the House. In relation to the renewable rebates that you said goes only up to 2020, is it possible that you can make a suggestion to them, because we're just opposing to your issue that you needed it to go up to 2023? Is that what you said? 2038. Yeah, well, it's longer than I thought. Is it possible that you can browse it to them and look at the recommendation later, Chair, because we don't have enough time to apply amendments? Thanks.
Matthew, it's seldom that we agree, but it's great to hear you say that we are overtaxed. So I think we need to get together over a cup of coffee about that one. And to Eskom, you say you're committed to this whole process. Can you try and explain to us then why you're dragging your heels on the Independent Power Producers Program, which I see yet again has now been stopped for some reason, despite the announcement made by the Minister?
We've got a bit of time. Can I just ask the two DA members, will we finally finish at 3 minutes to 3 o'clock? It gives us 3 minutes to get to the House. Will that be okay? Okay, fine. Because then, can I also make be very fair to civil society? I think all parties here will agree. You see, I know you feel the last cluster now, you're being pushed, right? But remember, we're going to have a further session where National Treasury will reply to you, then you don't have to come in such large numbers. You can even get a Cape Town person to speak for you, right? Then you will have a chance to reply. And can I suggest, comrades and colleagues, we focus mainly on the last four submissions, to be fair to them. But Tandy, you can ask one or two more questions.
I need to start at the office, please.
Okay.
Can I be allowed to?
Yeah. All right. Let you reply.
Thank you, Chair. I think just an honourable member, Tobias Pokola's point, we will definitely continue engaging with National Treasury, and we also want to do financial modelling now, which we're currently doing, to be more clear on our numbers. In terms of the renewable IPP program that was supposed to, I was very happy to come here today and say we've signed the PPAs, but you would have seen what happened yesterday with NUMSA and Transform South Africa. So the DOE has put out a media statement to say that they did go to court very late yesterday and were given, so the court said they couldn't make a decision. That's been moved to the 27th March. So we couldn't sign yesterday for that reason. We can only do that after the court proceedings on the 27th March. To answer Honourable Lee's question around why have we been dragging our heels, I think we've spoken about it quite a lot in the media. If you look at the revenue models around electricity pricing and what the IPPs have come in at and what Eskom's base price is, there's a huge difference in that price. And I think if you look at our financial situation and if you look at what the investors are saying, we were told at some point by our ratings agencies that we are going against our fiduciary duty by signing on IPPs that are more expensive than our own generation. So I think we signed up to bid window 3.5, and now the rest we're waiting to hear what happens in court on the 27th of March, but in discussions with NERSA and with DOE, the plan is now to sign those PPAs. And just to respond to the remark by Kofasio, we would love to build more renewables. We don't decide, though, what to build. It's regulated. There's an IRP. The Minister of Energy makes a determination as to who builds what. In the last determination, Eskom was not allocated anything. So the last thing we were allocated to build was Kusile, so Madupi Kusile Ingula that we've built. So we built our own renewables plants within our own generation sites because we have those licenses. But to build any more renewables, we would have to have an allocation from the DOE. And so we've been in discussions with the DOE to say we would like to build more renewables. And please understand, it's not to crowd out any IPPs. It's to be part of that market to say we want to do more renewables in the country. And I think also what's very important is transmission and interconnectors. So we can build all the generation we like, but if we don't invest in transmission interconnectors in the country as well, that's also a problem. So those are the kind of discussions we're having with the DOE and with DPE, and also trying to find financing for those kind of things. So when I say we're committed, there's a lot, you know, there's a lot that's going on that probably doesn't get out in the public in terms of what we are doing to support the renewable industry in the country. Thanks.
Chair, I think we should have a special rule where the DA is not allowed to agree with anything we say. It always puts me in trouble, Chairperson. But, yeah. thanks, Chair. Look, I think, Chair, maybe just respond to ESCOM. Look, we're happy to hear what they're saying, and we're happy that there's a new Minister of Energy who we hope will help to provide leadership to this kind of unnecessary fight and mess over the past few years. I think our simple plea from ESCOM is let's come with a jobs plan. I think that's always our plea to all the government departments, that we're government is quick to tax or to have a plan, but we never see the jobs plan coming with it. And it makes it very difficult for us to sell anything to our members, because they look at us as, oh, you're selling out, you're allowing a jobs bloodbath. And basically every sector of the economy is bleeding jobs left and right. We have 36% unemployment. And every chair, when we do try to sell things to our members, to say, let's engage with government, government is committed. Like on the health promotion levy, you find that once that we finish the tax issue, that government then all of a sudden doesn't have energy to negotiate a jobs plan. They hide behind bureaucracy or the market forces, you can't interfere in the market and other weird things, Chair. So we'd plead that maybe honourable members can assist us to say let's get industry, government, labour, civil society, NGOs in one room. Let's come with this just transition plan, both short, medium and long term, Chair. We can't deny climate change. We'd be lunatics if we did, but let's not also throw innocent coal workers who just wanted to buy bread for their kids under the bus, Chair.
Please, you are free to interrupt, but when Candy does it, you get really angry. Now, but because you do it so little, now you do it so little, you are full latitude, Mr. Curtin, is it? But you can interrupt too. In this committee, we allow it. Your committee, I know you don't allow it. Is there anything you want to say?
No, I just have a comment. I'm just to say I'm blessed I don't serve on your committee. I'm blessed I don't sit on your committee.
You're revealing my brother. Okay, so can we go to WWF?
Was there a question for me, Chair?
No.
Oh, what a gift. Okay, so I suppose I would like to talk about the fact that the National Planning Commission is about to embark on a process to do what Comrade Parks was saying, to have a, you know, business, government, labour, civil society process looking at phasing the transition. What should that look like? Where are the just transition opportunities and so on? So I think that is, you know, we should actively participate in that. And then I could end maybe just by underlining the urgency, because almost everyone else has said, go slower, think about it carefully. We've had, you know, since 2010 to think about this carefully. So really, we can put people in a pressure cooker, they can redesign, you know, if Treasury, if it wants to respond to some of these inputs, we can have public hearings very fast, and let's get this done and meet the Minister's commitment to have the tax in place by January next year.
Thank you. Where's legal resources? Do you want to say anything? We've got about 2 to 3 minutes.
Thank you. I just think the biggest issue for us would be the compliance enforcement and how that system is going to operate, in particularly if the DA is going to be the competent authority. The biggest issue there, of course, comes in capacity, how it's going to be implemented, and how they're going to operate with the mining community, the mineral department, mineral resources department, and how they're going to be allowed to go on to mining areas. Because as you know, the MPRDA has the jurisdiction for environmental issues that pertain to mining activities. That's our biggest issue that we would like clarity on going forward. Thank you, Chair.
No, Professor, you've had a fair chance. You can come when we meet, which is what I'm going to end on. Right? Very quickly, I know the Environment Committee is not familiar with this, but presumably we can discuss with the Chair and he can discuss with the committee members. So this is only the first part of the hearing. And we can have the second part. The second thing to say is I will confer with the Chair, but we also, Mr. Patton might be interested to know also, what we do is we encourage on tax bills. No one wants to pay tax, right? So what we do is we encourage discussions between Treasury and the parties who are contesting a bill, and then the staff goes, and where I can, I do go as well. So as far as possible, we will be there in some form or another, the committee to strike sort of compromises. Secondly, we need to alert you that the VAT bill, if you want to call it that, the rate and monetary bill is our priority at the moment, and the PIC bills. There are two bills, one private members and so on. So from the Finance Committee side, we don't have a single free slot, and the Parliament rises on the 28th of March. It reconvenes in the second or third week of April. And so we're going to focus largely on the rate and monetary bill because of the VAT increase. So we're not plunging ourselves. We're going to have a workshop suggested by the comrade here, the chairperson. He wants a workshop, and I think it's a good idea. So we'll have a workshop first to get a better technical grasp of the issues, and then sometime towards the end of the second quarter, we will then confer with the chair and find a date. So before the end of June, we will come back and take this process forward. If we can do it faster, so much the better. I was being metaphorical when I said it would take us 10 years, my sister.
No,
it will be done, right? But what we're saying is that this committee won't, and I'm sure this our colleague committee also won't, process a bill we don't understand. So we're going to take this opportunity of thanking all of you very, very much and for your forbearance with us as members of Parliament that we've... Can I just say just finally one last point? Even if we'd sat till 4:30 or 5, frankly, I'm not so sure that the quality of the exchange would have been particularly better than it has been. You see, we have to read, and that's going to take a long time. We do not want you to write long. These documents are over the constituency period, the chairs will have to read it, and members will choose what they read. I know the DA's got very good researchers, I'm sure they do, and the members do, right? So we will read, and we'll better understand the issues. But what we are asking you to do is, in the meanwhile, you've heard each other. If you can encourage dialogue between yourselves, between WWF and the mining companies, do it. So that you can understand each other better. It's a big business to fund those things. And for, those opposed to you not to get co-opted because you've been funded, right? There are other things you must settle. So can we encourage you to discuss things? And they will be coordinated. Younger, the same process, I'll explain to Comrade Mapulani, the same process will apply, right? And the faster you do that, the quicker we can strike deals, right? Good. So she will write to you. So in short, please understand this is only the beginning of the process. Thank you very much.
Which for me
you have to see the topic.
Yeah, but when you're at our age, you know, maybe later when you're now tired and old, and now you want to think about it. But now you don't even know maybe where you want to sustain yourself. Well, for me, I have to do for myself. Yeah, so, yeah, so
for
maybe
me,
for you.
That's
no, it can't be. That's too early. Like, you know, I can assure you that's too early for that. So that's why.
It can come.